Well, it is just lashing down here in Bloomington. I can always tell when the weather is poorly because my east-facing windows, when they start taking the rain, that means a little rotation. Yeah, it is a heavy thunderstorm downtown. Hopefully it'll move out of the area here in the next hour or so, but it doesn't appear to be the case. We've got stuff all afternoon. Temperature 63. When we started with you at 3:05, it was 83. I thought it would be here. And you can just see the waves of wind pushing the rain from west to east, from southwest to northeast, through the intersection. And there is lightning bouncing around. This is a very powerful thunderstorm. Wherever you are right now, I would just hang out for a minute or two, unless you want to run to your car in this. I've seen students running off the bus. They don't look like they're having any fun, and I bet the Uber drivers are out there handling pickup on campus as we speak. Jimmy Gordillo will join me at 5:30. Owen Valley Edgewood Tennis is postponed. They will play Wednesday. I don't know if that forecast is any better, with the semifinals going to be on Thursday. Whatever else is outside tonight, we will keep an eye on Indiana men's soccer. They are hosting Michigan coming up at 7 p.m. That's on the Big Ten Network, so if you're soft like I am, I've got other things to do. You can watch on the Big Ten Network, and we hope things clear up by kickoff time, 7 o'clock for that. We promised you Mayor John Hamilton would be here a little bit later today. I'm not walking down that beeline. I am not cruising down Morton Street. I'm not wading into for the Fernandez Plaza. Is the power on at City Hall, my friend?
We are fine. Nice to talk with you. It's quite a blow though coming in. I didn't expect this to this morning.
This has changed as the day has gone along. So yeah. I agree with you. When I sat here yesterday, we were expecting this later this evening, and as we know in Indiana, things can change quickly, and that's why we do the weather about 100 times. But yeah, it went from sunshine at 2 o'clock to, well, it's kind of cloudy here, at 3 o'clock to the rain at 3:30, then all hell broke loose about 4:15.
Yeah.
And here we are. So let's be safe. Let's be smart.
Indeed.
People are still getting off buses from either the city buses or college buses as well. So just please look both ways. And we know we have those don't turn on red signs downtown. Well, let's try to obey those as well, because the visibility there for a minute, Mayor Hamilton, I still can't see campus. So
it's serious. So you're good reminder to be careful. All the school kids and all the people getting in, out and about, and a lot of people without umbrellas may be running around. So.
They are running, and when they got halfway across Walnut Street from 7th and Walnut, from the east to the west, about three white lines from the crossing guard where the crosswalk is, the last three, splash, splash, splash.
Geez.
Well, that's so all the rain.
Yeah, puddles up.
Oh, and it does quickly, and it's dry, so it's all going to run off everything because the ground hasn't had any moisture in it.
Right.
So
right.
Let's hang on with both hands and be smart and get through. How are you today? Good to hear from you.
Well, I'm fine. Thanks for letting me adjust the time a little bit today. I had to say goodbye to Paula McDevitt, our Parks Department 8-year leader, 35-year veteran. She had her last Parks Board commission, Parks Board today, and I wanted to say goodbye to her in front of them. So I thank you for your flexibility, Mike.
Well, for a great public servant, we'll always make that time. There's no question about it. So congratulations to Paula. And retirement? Is that
she's retiring October 16th, and she's done a great job. As she came here after college and worked for the Bloomington Parks Department for 35 years, with the last 8 as the director. So it's kind of a cool career, and she did a great job and has a wonderful team and won a gold medal, you know, a few years ago, and
right.
Switchyard and all that stuff she's been doing. So
she is part of Club Hotel California. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. And that's the meetings are on Tuesday nights about 7:30. So if you want to be a part of any of that. So the weather is a big deal. Why? Well, we haven't had any weather entire month. And I'm sitting here on the fourth floor and watching. I'm close to the lightning. I'm about as close as maybe a little uncomfortably close to how everything's
going. If anything happens, I'll dial 911 for you.
I appreciate that.
So, yeah. Same for me, right?
Exactly. Yes. We'll see whose generator works better if that needs to be the case. So be careful, be smart, be sound. and enjoy it. We have a huge. I'll get to the fun stuff first before we dive into the other things. We have a tremendously busy weekend in town because annually, yeah. Lotus Festival is one of the highest attended, most look forward to events that we put on here. Talk about how that community partnerships with everybody we're going to run into this weekend to put on the World Music Lotus World Music. What is that fair? What are they
called?
Festival. Yeah.
I was just talking to Adam Wason, Public Works Director, how we're doing, and it seems things are on track, on target. As you know, they kind of take over the downtown several blocks with wonderful performances from all around the globe. It's always exciting and entertaining, and encourage anybody to come down who wants to see it. They have tons of volunteers who make it all happen every year, and there's going to be lots of opportunities for not only just great music, but you can enjoy some food and libations, and you hope the weather will be good for
perfect.
This weekend.
Perfect.
Good, and the downtown closures, as you know, on Kirkwood will carry through this weekend, so it's kind of a big finish with Lotus.
So that's my next point on this. We will have different closures because of Lotus Fest, especially around the square. We know that's an annual annual point, 4th Street as well, and other things will pop up. But once Lotus Fest ends on October 1st, when do we take down the barriers and bollards on Kirkwood and open back up? Is that on Monday?
I think they'll be done Sunday into Monday. I'm not exactly sure when, but I think Monday it'll be open back up. That's the plan anyway.
So the whole month of October, besides the first day because of Lotus Festival, we will have Kirkwood returning to, well, I don't know, normal, just Kirkwood returning to Kirkwood.
Different.
Yeah,
yep.
Well, yep. Seasonal yep. Kirkwood.
Yeah, I think it's interesting how the community continues to react to it and evolve. I was talking... Somebody said on a game day, football game, home game day, it can feel like Mardi Gras down there, on Kirkwood in different ways. And so that can be nice, But we got to see how that evolves. As you and I have talked about, I do kind of hope that it'll evolve to be more and more used as a public space, not just an avenue for traffic. But that'll happen over time, I think.
And the more experience we have in dealing with it and the more examples we have to cite, I think will help out as well. And that's something you can't do. You can't teach experience or say, well, I know it's going to be this way. Well, no, we've got to go through some of these maybe growing pains or whatever they are to see what works and what doesn't work. And we've already done that because I'll remind people that don't remember, we used to close these off for weekends only.
Yeah.
And that became too much of a hassle. Are we going to set these tables up? We're going to pull this off. We're going to move this pier back. No, it was too much. So it's already evolved once.
It has. And the timing has evolved and the exact locations have evolved a bit, and that's all good. We'll try trial and error, see what works. And again, I think people really enjoy it, but we got to make sure it worked for the merchants and for the delivery people and for public safety and all that stuff while we continue to try to use the space as actively as we can.
Did you hear my story right before I went to the break, before you came on, about IU Bloomington changing their undergraduate commencement? Did you hear that?
I just heard. I came in the middle of that, Mike. I hadn't heard that. Changing it to an evening. Is that right? I didn't know that.
Yes, they're going to change it to Saturday at 7 p.m. on May 4th, still at Memorial Stadium. But that is and again, I said my piece on it, but I'll reinforce it. If you just tuned in, that's a terrible deal for our local restaurant group. I don't know who has a party before they go to graduation, but when you had the 10 a.m. graduation, then you'd have the tent rentals and the all-day celebrations, and then you'd go to lunch and fill up our restaurants. And if you're going to get a hotel room here, it's not a one night thing anyhow. It's a multiple night stay. I don't see how that's going to help much of anything. Who's going to go out and have a grand old time? Who's going to have a graduation party before graduation?
I don't know. I didn't hear that. I will be interested to hear. IU's thinking about it. We meet with them regularly, but
yeah. Let me know if you hear anything different, because I know this isn't something that they're going to come out and say, well, here's why. The quote from Pamela Witten is, moving our large, well-attended undergraduate ceremony later into the evening provides more opportunity for our school recognition events to happen before the commencement ceremony, when it is more convenient for our graduates and their families who might be traveling from out of town or out of state.
Means like the individual schools, I guess. Is that right? Like the different
you know, if they want to have a coffee and donut social before graduation, I don't know how that's that has to be,
you know, it'd be interesting. I don't know what, like, looking at other Big Ten universities, what they do. I don't really know.
But our local business is you're eliminating Saturday night dinner. You're eliminating Saturday night or Saturday afternoon. Because in the old days at 10 a.m., well, you had a group that would go to lunch afterwards,
they'd
start going to dinner at 4 o'clock or whatever it was.
And as you said, anybody who's staying overnight has to get a two-night anyway, probably.
Right.
Yeah,
and if you're going to have a party with your friends, you know, it's like, we all went to nursing school together. Let's rent a tent in our backyard where we've all lived together and celebrate all day. Well, that's not going to happen. You're not going to celebrate before you go to the ceremony, are you?
Well, it might make the ceremony a little more, I don't know.
But it's not. Yeah, you have all these other things that are going to happen.
Yeah.
Okay, it's interesting. So we're always watching things that go on. Speaking of annexation, legalities, lawsuits, and whatnot, I can't remember what we spoke about last time. You being the city, looking to drop one to advance the other. Can you give us just a roundup on where we're at?
Yep. So we're now asking the court that is doing the trial for the West Side, areas 1A and 1B.
Those are the people that accumulated enough votes to be heard by trial, correct?
Well, they accumulated less votes, fewer percentages than the other areas. So they got more than 50%, but not enough to terminate the annexation.
Gotcha.
Under what we think are inappropriate rules, but anyway, that's another issue. But that group, which is headed to trial in November, the court issued a stay to wait for another case. We said we're going to drop that part of the other case so we can go straight to trial. So we're. The most immediate thing is waiting for that court, and I think we're going to be talking to him next week to say, can we set the trial date so that we can move forward with that on that West Side, largest two areas and the most population, to try to get that settled relatively quickly in a matter of a few months, we hope. That still leaves the constitutional litigation for the other areas, which has to do with the whole termination of waivers that are older than 15 years, which we thought which the legislature did, and we think was illegal under the Constitution of the U.S. and the Indiana Constitution. But that's a longer lawsuit, and that'll probably take some significant time to get a final resolution. So we've got two different things going. One we hope will be done in a few months.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest this afternoon. He joins us on Tuesdays, and if you're joining us at 4:35, and you say, well, he's usually not on here. Ha-ha, he is today. So we're busy, and obviously the city has plenty of things going on. There was one issue I talked to with Deputy Mayor Larry Allen last Thursday, and I want to revisit this because obviously your opinion is important as the mayor here. When we talk about being in a community of rules and regulations, we talked about a scooter accident happening. We talked about a bike accident happening on the trail. Liability, rules, regulations, the police not, quote-unquote, either arresting or handling it on the spot. What can a city do? What can the police do? What is within their jurisdiction? I think there's some misconception here of why can't you arrest this guy now? Well, there's more to it than that, it appears.
Yeah, I've read some of the coverage of that. It is interesting. You know, that was of course we had it was a terrible scooter accident, and the rider of the scooter, and I've seen the video. Took a really radical move and got really badly hurt, and we're hopeful that he's recovering. The accident of the bicyclist running into a pedestrian on the B-line was also of concern. I think what's good to remind people probably is that they're called accidents. They're things that happen in traffic or among as people are moving around, and typically they don't involve criminal liability unless there's a reckless behavior, or persons driving under the influence against state law or local ordinances. That way, of course, there can be criminal liability, but generally, accidents that happen because of inattention or because of a failure of a piece of equipment or other things like that are accidents, and they're dealt with in the civil lawsuits of insurance companies and occasionally litigation. But that's what is the typical episode. And the police, while they're important for police reports and to understand what happened in an accident, are not typically involved in criminal activity for just a civil kind of negligent accident that happens. And I think that's good to remember. Now, of course, they look at each incident, and I heard the prosecutor read them describing this accurately, which is they always look at every incident, but unless there's pretty egregious, reckless disregard behavior, it's not going to end up in a criminal prosecution.
Now, the civil side of that, that's completely different, correct?
Totally different, and that's between the two parties. And if somebody is negligently riding or driving and causes an accident and causes damage, you know, most of us are used to that in the insurance world with car accidents where some of us can remember probably the whole idea of no-fault insurance, where it just wasn't worth, in many accidents, it wasn't worth figuring out whose fault it was. That's what insurance is for, unless it's an egregious thing. But and civil lawsuits can happen if there's damage from somebody's action that hurts somebody else. If the insurance doesn't cover it or isn't sufficient, you can have litigation, or sometimes the insurance companies sue each other.
For those who think that, who don't agree with that point of view and perhaps, quote unquote, want the law changed, how does that process work?
Well, criminal liability is set primarily at the state level. We can do some things locally, but criminal law is generally set there. You know, if you think about it, if you're driving over the speed limit, you don't generally get criminally prosecuted. You have a ticket, a civil ticket, fine. Now, in egregious circumstances, of course, you can. But those are laws that are passed by the state legislature or sometimes by local council to set that kind of liability.
And the city can have codes and directives and everything else, but the state law supersedes all of that?
Yeah, really. I'm trying to think on my feet about this. I don't generally the criminal liability is set at the state level. I'm not sure we can't even do that. We can certainly set rules and have fines and liability that way, but we don't generally set criminal law.
And again,
it's enforced, of course, at the county level too, right? Generally, the county prosecutors and the county courts, criminal courts, handle those.
And if you want to be on the Board of Public Safety, the city has openings, an upcoming vacancy for that. So if you don't agree with how it's handled or managed, and I saw the same article you did in the HT with some council members exasperated on why this isn't happening, there's a reason you have a team of lawyers at any governmental level, correct?
Yep. And again, I just think, you know, look, we can have terrible accidents. We can have fatalities and terrible accidents that happen in our world with motor vehicles moving around, or sometimes bicycles, motorcycles, scooters, different things. And that doesn't mean that criminal law is generally involved. It can be, but usually it's a civil matter between the parties. And again, there are insurance companies and medical damages and those kinds of things, and it certainly can lead to litigation. I don't know all of the details of what happened in either of the cases that you mentioned, but so far as I know, they've both been handled through the civil side rather than any criminal prosecution.
Mayor John Hamilton is our guest this afternoon, talking about all the things making headlines here in Bloomington. And bikes are being stolen everywhere, I see on the headline of the paper today. Again, that's it's a headline.
That is illegal. That's a crime.
Well, there we go. That is different. And what can you do as a police department? Everybody keeps one more eye out on that. It's unfortunate. You keep your bikes locked up. Keep your keep your eyes on it. Now we know to look for it. This is, I don't want to say commonplace this time each year, but when students come back, it seems those numbers rocket through the roof.
Well, I have seen in the past, we have had some episodes where there was a real flurry that we identified and the police identified through a bicycle theft ring that was really an organized group. We've cracked that in the past, some years past. I haven't seen a suggestion, and I think in the same article you saw didn't suggest that this was an organized group that's happening. We do have a lot of bicycles in town. It is good reminder to lock them up. I'm sorry that we all have to do that, but particularly a lot of valuable bicycles are too tempting for some people. I don't know that those numbers are up this year. I haven't seen a comparison of that, but it is a reminder that just like we're used to locking our cars, most of us, and it's important to lock up a bicycle if it's got some value to it, and we will of course continue to investigate, and we will prosecute people who steal bikes, and we work closely with the university on all that too.
And again, it's if you had 1,000 police officers, I think we all can agree we could use some more, but that's not again. There's a difference. And nobody wants their bike stolen. Got it. We understand that. At least I understand that. But it's not if you don't lock your bike and you get your bike stolen, I don't know what we can do to help. So all of these things need to happen, I think, to make us a smarter, safer place to be, because we're trying to build a jail. We don't want a bigger jail, but we're having places to – if we're going to have all these volunteers – it's like a cemetery. They're all dying to get in. Well, if we're going to have people that run afoul of the law, at some place they're going to have to be handled, because I know we have some repeat business. And, again, business owners are not thrilled with some of the actions going on downtown. It is a larger problem. I understand that. And we're trying to figure out where to build this new justice campus.
Yeah, one thing, I'll come to that in a second, but it's probably worth noting I'm presenting the we got our official public hearing of the budget tomorrow. And we are adding a number of downtown public safety resources, in part recognizing that having more eyes on the street is good. As you indicate, if somebody's determined to steal a bike and there's a double police patrols, they're going to wait till both cars are gone and then they'll do it, whatever. But we're adding five full-time equivalent, five staff members who will be non-sworn police positions, community service specialists, who are really going to be focused on downtown and having a presence there. We're adding a second after-hours ambassador, which I think has been a successful innovation. We started it just a few years ago, and we're going to add another full-time person for that, and continuing to try to help recruit more police and fire, too, of course.
Got to do all of that stuff. Why? It's growing. We have more people moving in every day, student life, business life. It's a growing community. That's what happens. Now, the city has nothing to do with the site that is going to be determined for this new Justice Center. I just want to bring that up again so you can reinforce that point.
Yeah, I ducked that for a moment. I wanted to talk about that other matter just so people knew the budget was coming. But absolutely, we have a really important whole process to continue and get done on what we're doing with the criminal justice system. You and I have talked about that a few times. I continue to emphasize how important it is to invest in things besides the jail, in addition to the jail, to try to help make sure we prevent the need for additional jail cells. But the location of the jail is a decision to be made by the county. There are a number of parties who are interested in that, of course, the sheriff, the county commissioners, the county council, who have to pass all the budget parts of that, and they are continuing to look for sites. They've got one they're looking at more seriously, I think, which is down in the old Thompson RCA location off of Wester Rogers, but they continue to look. One of the challenges is we really still don't know the size needed. The current jail sits on an acre or less probably.
Yeah.
And there's been talk about needing 25 acres. Well, that's a dramatically different search than if you're looking for 1 or 2 or 3 acres. So I think it's still a little complicated, but the county's trying to struggle their way to find the right place, and that's a tricky. It is a tricky decision and process. I certainly respect that.
And as we move forward with the budget as well, that's going to be tomorrow night. What does the meeting look like? There's going to be a formal first reading. Is that how it works? And you have then you're going to have public comment on some of this.
Yeah, under the state law that defines how cities like ours pass our budget, we need to have we publish the numbers, and we did that a couple weeks ago. And then this is all after the August hearings, which are detailed and long but informal in a way. We publish the numbers, and then tomorrow night is the official public hearing on the budget. I will be there along with all the cabinet to answer questions. I'll be presenting anything that changed since August, going through a few things. I'll be presenting the details of the $19 million one-time investments from the American Rescue Plan Act and our other local funds. And then there will be time for the council to question, for public comment, and then 2 weeks after that is when the council should vote on the actual 2024 budget.
That'll be October 11th if you are scoring at home. So that's a busy Wednesday night, tomorrow night. What time does everything get started? 6 o'clock? Is that
6:30.
6:30.
We start, I believe, with the council.
Good seats are still available. Check StubHub if you need to get in there and do all that. Boards and commissions, I know you're looking for people to fill those up. That's not always the case, but it's usually the case.
Yeah, check it out on our website. We have, 40 some boards and commissions, and you've got a few hundred people on those. They move in and out a little bit, and it's a great chance for people to get involved in issues they care about, issues they want to get involved in, from, as you mentioned, the Board of Public Safety to Parks Board. We talked about them, and sustainability and zoning appeals and pedestrian to, all kinds of stuff.
There's plenty of it, folks, and there's ways to get involved, and it does make a difference here locally. Go to bloomington.in.gov to check out all of those opportunities. And before I let you go, I know you want to talk about the Building Trades Park Master Plan. There's a big public meeting coming up on Thursday. I don't want to get that lost in the jet wash of tomorrow night's budget meeting.
Yeah, we started by me talking about how Paula McDevitt's leaving after 8 years as Parks Director, and one of the things the Parks Department does is plan a lot and reach out for feedback. They have a regular 5-year intensive overall strategic planning, and then because Building and Trades, which is right there on 2nd Street, north of the old hospital of Hopewell, because that neighborhood is going to be changing a lot, there's going to be a master planning process to think about what should that park look like, 5 years from now, 10 years from now. And we really welcome public input. It's one of our older parks. It's a beautiful urban rectangle. And thinking about if you had a few hundred residences near it, that can change what a park is like. Much like the 3rd Street Park right by the police station, as they move, that'll change that park a little bit too if that gets redeveloped in different ways.
Everybody has a voice. Go ahead and make it heard coming up again Thursday night. That is September 28th, and that meeting will be where? It will be in the council chambers. So that'll be a very busy. If you buy a season ticket, you can get into all these council chamber events. Big night tomorrow night. We'll be watching for the results there. Deputy Mayor Larry Allen will help us out on Thursday to make sure we get a big recap of what's going on and keep our eyes on it. Have a great weekend. Welcome to fall. The rain has stopped. Run
looks
for
like
your car.
It's clearing up a little bit, isn't it? Maybe.
I see some windshield wipers going, but yes, it is. There is some sun behind me, I feel, that's warming the building up. I always thank you for your time, and thank you for getting to the big issues facing us here in Bloomington. Thanks, John.
Thank you for talking to us. I really appreciate it. Everybody have a good week.